You're tuned to WFHB.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community and supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM, reporting live for WFHB, this is Kim Hahn.
And I'm Charlotte Wegermiller. This is the Daily Local News for Monday, April 29th, 2019.
We're also paying our police officers not enough. The other cities like Anderson and I believe Elkhart was another one, pay their police officers more than we do here, and we're larger by almost 40,000 people.
Later in the program, WFHB correspondent Michael Glab speaks with Ryan Maloney, candidate for the District 5 seat on Bloomington City Council, on today's edition of Big Talk Extra with Michael Glab.
Also coming up in the next half hour, Henry Donnert talks about his experience from high school dropout to retirement, as well as his volunteerism with the Broadview Learning Center. That's coming up later in the program on Activate, our weekly segment spotlighting people working for positive change in our community. But first, your daily headlines.
Former United States Senator Richard Lugar died over the weekend. Lugar, who was Indiana's longest-running statesman, died on Sunday at 87 years old. A former two-term mayor of Indianapolis, Lugar served as a U.S. Senator for Indiana from 1977 to 2013. During his 36-year career in the Senate, Lugar co-authored the Nunn-Lugar Act in 1991 along with Georgia Democrat Sam Nunn. That act purchased and dismantled weapons of mass destruction from former Soviet states after the fall of the Soviet Union. Lugar received the Presidential Medal of Freedom from the then-President Barack Obama in 2013. Lugar's 36-year Senate career ended in 2013 when he was defeated in the Republican primary by Tea Party Republican and former state treasurer Richard Murdoch. Murdoch then lost to Democrat Joe Donnelly in that November's election. Indiana Governor Eric Holcomb has directed flags throughout the state to be lowered. Vice President and former Indiana Governor Mike Pence issued a statement yesterday that reads, quote, "Lugar was a leader not only in the Senate but also on the world stage, where he worked tirelessly to bring pressure to end apartheid in South Africa and enforce treaties that destroyed Soviet weapons of mass destruction," unquote. Lugar died in Falls Church, Virginia on Sunday. He is survived by his wife Charlene Smeltzer and their four sons.
The National Rifle Association's convention took place in Indianapolis over the weekend. Notably absent was NRA spokesperson Oliver North. North, a retired Marine lieutenant colonel at the center of the Iran-Contra scandal, announced Saturday he would not serve a second one-year term as NRA spokesman. North's term ended today. The Associated Press reports North's announcement brings an end to a long-standing fight within the organization between him and NRA chief executive Wayne LaPierre. On Thursday, LaPierre sent a letter to the NRA board members stating that North was threatening to release damaging information about the chief executive. North's ouster this weekend appears to signal the NRA board is standing behind LaPierre. North was convicted in 1989 of obstructing a congressional inquiry into the Iran-Contra affair. That inquiry found Reagan administration officials sold arms to Iran in order to fund Nicaraguan anti-communist rebels. North's convictions were overturned in 1991.
The Monroe County Solid Waste Management District Board continues to explore composting as a way to reduce the trash sent to landfills. The board met with area trash and compost haulers last week. The talks were part of an ongoing discussion about whether to expand residential pickup, explore commercial options, or create a drop-off site. Solid Waste Management Director Tim McGlasson Jr. said a 2018 report from Kessler Consulting revealed 8,000 to 10,000 tons of food could be diverted from local landfills through composting.
We met with the local composting facilities last month, you know, and they indicated, you know, that there's an interest in, you know, in receiving that material. They have the capacity or are willing to expand to generate the capacity to receive that material. So now we've invited the haulers to come talk with us, and, you know, we want to see, get your thoughts and perspectives on, you know, collecting and hauling this material to the local composting facilities, and, you know, what would it take to accomplish that from the hauler's perspective.
Haulers say basic issues like what containers to use and how and where to haul the waste will need to be decided. But the overarching concern is how to keep waste streams separated and clean. Haulers find plastics and metals in food waste and rotting food among recyclables. Calvin Davidson of Ray's Trash Service said educating the community is crucial.
It's much easier to keep the post-industrial waste clean and segregated than it is. The post-consumer stuff is challenging.
Okay.
A lot of education there.
Davidson recommended the board focus its initial efforts on post-industrial waste rather than post-consumer waste.
By post-industrial scrap, I mean places that are preparing the food preparation houses that are clipping the tops off of the broccoli and the bottoms off of the pineapple or the whichever, you know, those kinds of things. That's very clean and controllable.
Yeah. Yeah.
And a great place to start, probably the lowest hanging fruit. There I go again with my dad jokes. But really starting there is to get the momentum, to get the good clean material and a volume of good clean material, I think is the lower hanging fruit that creates the education opportunity. Mm-hmm. Then people are talking about it. Mm-hmm. Regardless, for years we talked about recycling and we talked about including other recyclable items in programs. If you pick the most difficult step to make first, if it doesn't go well, everybody's going to know about it. Pick the step you feel most confident in doing well. Put your best foot forward would be my advice.
Citizens Advisory Committee member Kevin Dogan asked Fable Farms owner Andrea Avina whether the variety of material received makes a difference in how it's composted. Avina said usually not, because her company does small-scale composting. However, she said accepting food waste on the scale Davidson proposed could mean she has to significantly alter her composting mix.
For us, it doesn't make a difference. We have like a standard recipe. In the compost world, you talk about recipes of what your feedstock proportions are. We have a standard recipe that works pretty much for everything we bring in.
But if most of what you're getting is commercial and larger volumes,
that's different.
Then you're not going to get that same mix every time. And
exactly. And we kind of experience that with the sororities, where we get the bigger amounts of food, because this is, I mean, it's an entire stew that just didn't get eaten, right? And so it's just like buckets and buckets of the same thing, and that's where like our average varies a little bit. But this is still a sorority where maybe 100 girls live. It's not industrial scale. So something like what he is proposing would be a little more complicated for us immediately to adapt to, because it's suddenly, if you get a bunch of pineapples and it's a ton of water, then you do need to change your recipe to account for it.
Following up again on Davidson's example, Avina said though industrial waste items may be cleaner, some industrial waste items will never be acceptable for her company, like cake icing.
So these are things that we can definitely not take, because we just don't have a way to like completely change our recipe and make an entire windrow with I don't know how many tons of icing. So things like that, which are in some way are the low-hanging fruit because it's just icing and it's clean, they're also a little harder to compost.
The city of Bloomington has allowed private composters to serve households on its sanitation routes. Public Works Director Adam Wason said there may be other ways the city can accommodate composting.
We're entertaining some ideas of having, you know, potentially having some public drop-off sites, or, well, I don't know if they'd be considered public drop-off sites, but accommodating folks with, like Fable Farms, with opportunities to use potentially public lands to mm-hmm. have a drop-off site mm-hmm. as well. So, you know, something we'll explore, and, you know, we're more than willing to try new things and mm-hmm. see if it works, so.
No decisions were made at last week's meeting. Solid Waste Management Director Tim McGlasson Jr. said the board will continue to explore composting and recycling options. Reporting live for WFHB, my name is Charlotte Wegermiller.
And I'm Kim Hahn. The Daily Local News is brought to you by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com. Ryan Maloney is a bus driver and a student at Indiana University's School of Public and Environmental Affairs. He was born in Australia and his family moved to Nevada, where he was raised. He's running against incumbent Isabel Piedmont Smith for her District 5 seat on the Bloomington City Council. As a student at a local community college, Maloney helped defeat a law that would allow open carry on Nevada's campuses, an experience that inspired his commitment to public affairs and politics. He joined host Michael Glab on last week's Big Talk. The conversation continues on today's edition of Big Talk Extra.
Now, Ryan, let's talk about the issues.
Bring it on.
All right. Here's a quote. Bloomington Police Department. Currently, we have 8 to 10 officers on the shift at any one time.
Right.
They serve a community of roughly 84,000 people. That gives us on the order of one officer, or even less than one officer, for every 10,000 residents. In other words, you're saying we need more police officers.
That was a direct quote from Chief Dekoff at a recent meeting about how many officers we have on shift. Yeah. I went and reworded it there for you. But yeah, I think the biggest thing in our community is, I mean, we've seen it on the South Side. When I first moved here, the South Side was not as pleasant to live in as it was today. But the big issue is response times in our community are very slow. I feel for minor issues, getting someone out to look at your car if it's been broken into, stuff like that. And the issue at hand is we can have more police officers on shift. I mean, we're also paying our police officers not enough. The other cities like Anderson and I believe Elkhart was another one pay their police officers more than we do here, and we're larger by almost 40,000 people.
Now, right now, the police officers and the city are entering into mediation for the upcoming contract.
Yes, and they're still lowballing our police officers, and I think that's not acceptable. I mean, our police officers in our community, I'm not saying that there aren't serious issues in policing, especially in America, but even in Indiana. But I think as far as Indiana cops go, our Bloomington police officers are pretty much the best in the state, and they need to be compensated reflectively.
Do they work hand in hand with the IU police department?
I feel like they do, but I think that sometimes it has a slight, not adversarial, but a bit more of a complicated relationship than it needs to be, and that's based on territory-wise. When I was working as a dispatcher at IU Campus Bus briefly, we'd have issues along our routes where we needed a car towed, and we wouldn't know which department to call, and we'd call one department, and they'd say, call the other department. And then the same exact conversation would happen when I picked up the phone. So it's about figuring out how to make the most responsive and most responsible reactions to these situations.
You're for enhancing community policing.
Right, and what I would like to see is officers getting out of their cars and talking to the community more. They do, but it's mainly when they're on a call.
Right,
but I would
and
like
there's
to
so
see,
few of them on the street.
Right, I mean, like, how are you going to go ahead and take two officers out of a car during a shift when they need to be all over the city?
Right.
But another big issue in my mind is also our fire department. I did a ride-along with Bloomington Fire Department Station 5, which is down on the South Side off of Henderson, and those guys work really hard. We need another fire station on the South Side to increase our coverage. We also need to, start looking into infrastructures. We've got firefighters on the East Side station that are flushing a toilet with a screwdriver. I mean, that's not acceptable. It's been that way for 3 years too. So it's a matter of making sure that we're investing where it counts in our community to keep our public safe and to keep our homes safe and to keep our community as a whole safer.
Let's go to the 4th Street Garage.
Right.
Where did you stand?
I stood on rebuilding and replacing.
You were all for it.
Right. I was all for it. And that's because as a resident here, even in the summertime, that garage fills up. Pretty much right away with just people that work here in our community, which is great. They need somewhere to park so they can get to and from quickly. But the major parts of our year of graduation and move-in, there's nowhere to park downtown for you to go and get food. Yeah. Granted, it's going to take you a while to get food anyway because all the restaurants are packed, which is a good thing.
Right.
But the big thing is, I mean, right now my opponent is not thrilled about building a new garage because she's been quoted, I believe, saying there's no such thing as a sustainable garage.
Yeah.
But there's no such thing as a sustainable downtown economy and local economy if you can't get your employees and employers to park.
Now, another issue of yours, affordable housing.
Right. Affordable housing. And I want to focus on it being workforce affordable housing.
Uh-huh.
That's a big key thing for me. I spoke recently to the council and constituents about this. And the reason why is because I spend roughly 30 to 40% of my income as a bus driver on my housing here in town. I'm a renter, and that's a lot, going up and up and up and up. And our city needs to stop building just student-based developments for the people that are here 9 months out of the year. I know that that's a big part of our economy here in town is Indiana University, but luxury student housing, you know, at $1,200 a month for a studio, I mean, you know, that's
a lot of dough.
That's a lot of dough. And on top of that, I mean, like, I pay half that. And I live on the south end of town, and it's still a lot of money. You know, everyone's talking right now about low-income affordability, but there's no benefit program for workforce affordable. If you work in this city and you want to live here, you should be able to do so with your paycheck. And there's no reason that these people should have to live out in the county unless they absolutely want to.
Now, you say you want to incentivize affordable housing. How are you going to do that?
I think it's a conversation about talking to developers and getting things on track as far as getting zoning put through quicker and faster. Additionally, I would have to say, just being honest with them about how things are being built, I think their focus is trying to make the most money, which is understandable for them as a private business. But I think for our housing stock and our housing development here in the community, we need to be a bit more blunt with them about focusing on workforce affordable.
Now let's jump to smart development and growth.
Right.
You say that our town can't be, and I'm going to quote you here, mired in the woes of losing our unique spirit.
Yeah.
What do you mean?
A lot of the older community here in town, a lot of longtime residents think that we're losing our touch as Bloomington. They're losing the Bloomington that they grew up in because things are getting bigger. Like the Graduate Hotel was a major issue, and Smallwood back in the day was a big issue. That was before my time here in town. But I kind of understand where they're coming from. The big thing is, though, is we saw the result with Graduate Hotel. The front half of the building, which is directly on Kirkwood, fits in pretty well. It doesn't look completely alternative to how we've had it for decades. But we need to not be so afraid of growing up, you know, literally growing up, because density is a major tool to combat climate change. And it keeps people from going out of the city limits. If we got to keep on focusing on growing up instead of out.
So we want the central core to be a little more dense to avoid the sprawl at the periphery.
Right, exactly.
But you also say we must put our town's uniqueness on display.
Right, and that means partnering with local artists and local art groups to ensure that we have murals and such and good street art. I would like to see more street art in our community from local artists. I would also like to see that our community is displaying these art pieces in a way that's conspicuous and that can help kind of almost bring it back to a more local feel.
If someone wants to get in touch with the Maloney campaign, how do they do it?
Well, my website is maloneyforbloomington.com, and you can find me on Facebook and Instagram at maloneyforbtown5.
That's the numeral 5.
Yes, exactly. And then on Twitter, I'm maloneyforbtown.
That was Ryan Maloney speaking with Big Talk's Michael Glab. Full episodes of Big Talk air Thursdays at 5:30 p.m. right here on WFHB.
Support for WFHB comes from Lauren Wood Builders. Lauren Wood Builders is a family-owned company that sources local materials and local craftsmen to minimize environmental impact and sustain community. More information is available online at laurenwoodbuilders.com.
Now it's time for Activate, our weekly segment spotlighting people working for positive change in our community.
Welcome to Activate, featuring audio profiles of local volunteers who stand up for what they believe in, spark change, and create meaningful impact in our community. We invite you to get to know some of these volunteers through their inspiring stories of service.
Hi, my name is Henry Donnert, and I volunteer with the Broadview Learning Center, which is part of the Monroe County School Corporation, the Adult Education Program. What they specifically do there, they do actually two things. On one side of the building, they teach English as a language to a lot of individuals that are coming to Bloomington from different parts of the world that need some English classes. The other part is they teach the GED classes, which is the high school equivalency diploma. I retired May 31st, just recently. In June, I decided I needed to do something. And so after many, many years in working in human resources, I decided to kind of put that to use in a volunteer basis. And I connected with Jenny Dunnigan, who's their public relations and volunteer coordinator at the Broadview Learning Center. And we sat down and discussed and formulated a plan as to how I can contribute. What I currently do now for the Broadview Learning Center is teaching resume writing, cover letters, some interviewing skills, and so forth. I also teach and assist with the reading classes, reading comprehension, retention, to some of the students that are getting their GEDs, but they're lacking a little bit of skill in the comprehension, retention of reading material. I sat in those chairs at one time. I know what it feels like and that there is light at the end of the tunnel. So I kind of felt that, hey, doing this is a great opportunity, and it's leading to where I'd like to be. And where I'd like to be is to assist others that are seeking what I was seeking. And I attained what I wanted to attain, and I try to impart to the students that I'm working with that they can attain the same thing. Knowledge is power, and the education level helped me to attain everything that I have today. It wasn't that long ago when I was in my mid-30s that I got my GED. And I didn't go on to college until I think I was in my mid-40s. And so the attraction to assisting others that are getting their GEDs was quite enormous for me. I quit high school, and so it was many, many years of hardship, acting like minimum wage, behaving like minimum wage, dressing like minimum wage. And I figured that, I need to get out of this revolving door. And the only way to do that, I discovered, is through education. And GED was the first step, and then going on to college. And once I attained that college degree, all the doors that were closed to me at one time suddenly swung open. I found the opportunity through my current boss, and one of the great things about what I do there is that it gives me a lot of satisfaction knowing that I can take a past skill and perhaps pass that along to others that are seeking the same things that I was seeking. You always want to hope that it does make a difference. Something that I can say is that after being there several weeks and telling my story to other students, some of the high school GED students have come over and said, hey, if you can do it, maybe I can do it as well. You have thank yous, they'll tell you verbally, you may get a card, you may get a handshake, but I think the true thank you is when you see them graduate. And now they're going to be leaving. And hopefully they may go to Ivy Tech or maybe to IU. Who knows? So it's a lot of fun. And everybody likes being thanked. I like being thanked. You like being thanked for a job well done. And I think hopefully we're doing a job well done. If you don't have your high school diploma, GED, I would recommend getting in touch with the Broadview Learning Center and enroll in those classes. It's something that you will not regret, and you can take that to the bank. Thank you ever so much for the opportunity. It's been totally my pleasure. And again, I volunteer for the Broadview Learning Center, which is part of the Monroe County School Corporation here in Bloomington, Indiana.
You've been listening to Activate, a co-production of WFHB and the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, working together to inspire, engage, and connect individuals to their community. Listen to episodes of Activate online at WFHB.org. You can read more about the profile, see photos, and connect to featured organizations and causes. And visit BloomingtonVolunteerNetwork.org to discover even more opportunities to serve, give, and advocate. Get inspired. Inspire others. Activate in your community. For WFHB Community Radio and the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, I'm Lucy Shake.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Wes Martin and Sarah Vaughn in partnership with CATS, Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Michael Glab.
Activate is produced by Lucy Shake from the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network. Our engineer is Kevin Oliver. Our theme music is provided by Ben Lumsdaine, Scott Schmadke, and Danny Graff. Executive producer is Wes Martin. For WFHB, I'm Charlotte Wegermiller.
And I'm Kim Hahn. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program. You can hear tonight's full broadcast, as well as all other WFHB news programming, online at WFHB.org.
You can be a part of our award-winning news team. For more information about joining our volunteer team of citizen journalists, email news@WFHB.org.
Stay tuned for KiteLine, a program amplifying the voices of those within Indiana's prison system. Coming up next on WFHB.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB Bloomington Community Radio. Our news is written and reported by volunteers working to provide local news, cover local issues, and strengthen our local community. We invite you to participate. You may submit questions, comments, and story ideas to news@WFHB.org. You can become a Daily Local News volunteer by attending new volunteer orientation. You can find an archive of past shows and individual news reports online at WFHB.org and catch live broadcast of the Daily Local News Monday through Thursday at 5 p.m. We are local, longer.